Universal Times. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. North Korean diplomat Han Tae-sung warned Tuesday his country is preparing more gift packages for the U.S. because of its reckless provocation and futile attempts to pressure Pyongyang. He spoke through an interpreter.
The U.S. imposed nuclear threats and blackmail for more than half a century against my country, DPRK, with a ceaseless political and military pressure and economic sanctions.
His comments came a day after the UN Security Council met to consider what to do in the wake of Sunday's sixth North Korean nuclear detonation, a blast Japan said produced a yield of 70 kilotons. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed to the major powers to seek a unified political solution.
And I welcome yesterday's meeting of the Council. The unity of the Council is crucial in addressing the crisis. And that unity also creates an opportunity to engage diplomatically to decrease tensions, increase confidence, and prevent any escalation, all aimed at the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
At the White House, spokesperson Sarah Sanders said the U.S. wants to pressure, not dialogue with Pyongyang.
We've also said that everybody, including Russia, including China, need to do more to address the threat. This is a global threat, and everybody needs to take part in putting pressure on North Korea.
The U.S. is lobbying for another Security Council resolution with tougher sanctions, but it's unclear that would be supported by China and Russia. Kenya's election commission says different staff will be in charge of the October 17 presidential election, a ballot prompted by last week's Supreme Court ruling invalidating the August 8 ballot over widespread irregularities. Opposition leader Raila Odinga set conditions for his participation, including the sacking of several commission members. This is VOA News. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley Tuesday said the U.S. may not certify Iran's compliance with the 2015 international nuclear deal in October, as required by Congress.
We were promised an end to the Iranian nuclear program. What emerged was not an end, but a pause. The JCPOA is therefore a very flawed and limited agreement. But even so, Iran has been caught in multiple violations over the past year and a half.
Speaking in Washington, Haley warned Tehran's advancing ballistic missile program not explicitly covered by the deal, and its funding of terrorism could be taken into account in the certification process. The UN Security Council has established a sanctions regime in Mali, allowing the blacklisting of anyone who violates or obstructs the country's 2015 peace agreement, hinders aid, recruits child soldiers, or commits rights abuses. Those targeted will be subject to a global travel ban or asset freeze. UN Secretary General Guterres Tuesday also expressed alarm at violence sparked by a security crackdown in Myanmar, also known as Burma, following attacks by militants tied to the Rohingya Muslim community. He appealed to the Myanmar government to end decades of neglect and give the Rohingya some sort of legal status.
And the grievances and unresolved plight of the Rohingya have festered for far too long and are becoming an undeniable factor in regional destabilization.
Hundreds are believed to have been killed in the crackdown in western Rakhine State, with nearly 125,000 having fled to neighboring Bangladesh. President Donald Trump has announced he's ending a program shielding hundreds of thousands of young undocumented immigrants from deportation, allowing them to work and study in the U.S. New applications for the so-called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program will no longer be accepted. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said former President Barack Obama's executive order undermined immigration law.
President Obama was nullifying part of a law that he simply disagreed with. If a president can claim sweeping discretion to suspend key federal laws, the entire legislative process becomes little more than a pretense.
Congress will have 6 months to act on the matter. Hurricane Irma is now a Category 5 storm, the most powerful, and is churning in the Atlantic toward the Caribbean. National hurricane forecaster Michael Brennan said the storm, packing winds of nearly 300 kilometers per hour, may take a more northwesterly course toward the U.S. coast by week's end. Despite years of civil war, Syrians took time to cheer their football team after it scored a 93-minute stoppage time goal to win a match in Tehran, with Iran to a 2-2 draw, securing a spot for Syria in the Asian playoffs, possibly the World Cup. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C., and today is Wednesday, September the 6th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. The United States has ended a program that shielded nearly 800,000 young undocumented immigrants from deportation, a program that allowed them to work and study in the country. And in South Africa, after a recent failed vote of no confidence in South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, the opposition parties are not giving up.
So what is happening today at the Constitutional Court is part of a broader and multi-pronged strategy by the opposition to undermine the ANC for the opposition parties to benefit in 2019.
South African political analyst Obre Mashike. In Zambia, the main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, has rejected calls by supporters of the ruling party and some civil society groups that the party apologizes for statements made by its leader while on a visit to the neighboring country.
We see no reason why he should be made to apologize, because he was just stating the fact. There's no offense. He has not breached any law which says you can't say anything outside the country.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND. And in Burundi, 12,000 Burundian refugees who fled into neighboring Tanzania 2 years ago are said to be repatriated in 3 months. Those stories and more are coming up right here in Daybreak Africa. The spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, has rejected calls by supporters of the ruling party and civil society groups calling on the party to apologize for statements its leader made in South Africa. Charles Kakoma said that the party would, under no circumstances, apologize after dismissing the demands as without merit. The demands for apology came after Hakainde Hichilema, leader of the UPND, criticized things he found going wrong in Zambia while he was visiting neighboring South Africa. While answering a question in South Africa, Hichilema said there is a serious breakdown of the rule of law, citing state security operatives, including the police, for violating the law. But the groups demanding the apology says his pronouncements are a betrayal of his homeland and the citizens he seeks to lead. UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma tells VOA reporter Peter Cloti that there is no need for any apology since, he says, Hichilema was truthful in his pronouncements while in South Africa.
Well, nobody has told us exactly what is wrong with what Hakainde said in South Africa. He was being asked about his incarceration in prison and the conditions that are in prison, and he was describing the truth. And they asked him about the suspension of opposition MPs from his party, and he told them of what transpired. So basically, we see no reason why he should be made to apologize, because he was just stating the facts. Their concern is that he was saying those things outside the country and not in Zambia. But obviously, there's no offense. He has not breached any law which says you can't say anything outside the country. You can say it anywhere in the world. It's a global village.
Some civil society organizations described his statement as an attack and a betrayal of his homeland and the people that he seeks to lead. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that is baseless, because the things that are making Zambia's image to be tarnished are the things that are going wrong in Zambia. For example, if the police stop worshippers to go to a cathedral and worship, and the HH says that was wrong, even if he says it as the country, the people that have caused that are the police and the ruling party who are infringing on people's rights. And that is what is reflecting outside the country. And that is what HH was exposing.
Dr. Kanishos Banda, a former prominent member of the UPND who deputized Hakainde Hichilema, said that his statement in South Africa basically is an action which depicts that he is an enemy of the people. What's your response to that?
Well, he's a bitter person because he left the party and after being disciplined. And we don't expect him to praise Hakainde Hichilema. But he's also trying to praise the ruling party because he has been wanting an appointment. He has not yet gotten it until he speaks louder. So it should not be taken seriously.
Was there a breakdown of rule of law in Zambia, really? Because if it were, then Hakainde Hichilema and the UPND wouldn't have taken your concerns about the outcome of the elections to court, because the court is adjudicating that. So was there a breakdown of rule of law, as he said, in South Africa, really?
Yes, there are so many cases of the breakdown of the rule of law. For example, when a court issues an order and the executive disobeys that order, that is a breakdown of the rule of law. For example, Hakainde himself was ordered by the court to be kept at a prison in Lusaka, but the state decided to transfer him to a maximum prison in another town, at Mukobeko. That itself is a breakdown of the rule of law. We had planned a rally in Lusaka, and the police cancelled that rally. We went to court and obtained the order to go ahead with the rally. And the police still went and surrounded that venue so that we don't have the rally. That is a breakdown of the rule of law we are talking about. We have a case where the Constitution says when a petition is lodged in court, the president must handle the power to the speaker to act as president while the petition is on. That never happened. That's a breakdown of the rule of law. So if HH highlights those issues, he can't be an enemy of the country.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition party for national development, UPND. He spoke to viewers Peter Cloti from the capital, Lusaka. Still in Southern Africa, the opposition parties in South Africa are not giving up their quest to oust President Jacob Zuma. They're using the nation's high courts and the sitting of parliament. These latest attempts come after Zuma's many long simmering corruption scandals have provoked the opposition to call 8 unsuccessful votes of no confidence against him. All were handily defeated by the large majority held by Zuma's powerful African National Congress, ANC. From Johannesburg, South Africa, Anita Paul has this report.
President Jacob Zuma's many long simmering corruption scandals have provoked the opposition to call 8 unsuccessful votes of no confidence against him in Parliament, the latest last month. All were handily defeated by the large majority held by Zuma's powerful African National Congress. Tuesday saw 2 more attempts to bring down Zuma, in the nation's highest court and in Parliament. At the Constitutional Court in Johannesburg, the opposition economic freedom fighters led a bid to persuade the court's 11 justices to rule that South Africa's parliament failed to properly police Zuma's conduct in connection with his use of some $20 million in public funds for upgrades to his rural homestead. Advocate Timbeka Nkonketobi of the EFF.
So, in summary, what we are asking the court to do is to direct parliament to consider whether or not the conduct of the president is prima facie impeachable.
The Constitution says Parliament can impeach a president if 2/3 of its members vote to do so, a tall order considering the ANC holds 62% of the seats. Meanwhile, as these arguments continued in Johannesburg, the main opposition Democratic Alliance prepared to argue before Parliament in Cape Town that the entire legislative body should be dissolved to pave a path for early elections. Considering the ANC's strength, neither impeachment or dissolution look likely. And Zuma's time is nearly up. In December, his term ends as head of the ANC, and a new party leader will be chosen, a move that will effectively sideline Zuma before national elections in 2019. But analyst Aubrey Mashinqi says the opposition's recent efforts are part of a much longer game.
So what is happening today at the Constitutional Court is part of a broader and multi-pronged strategy by the opposition to undermine the ANC by making sure that the president's image crisis causes enough collateral damage on the image of the ANC for the opposition parties to benefit in 2019.
ANC caucus spokeswoman Nocheba Mhlawuli told VOA the party sees the Democratic Alliance parliamentary motion as frivolous.
It is proving that they are not interested in solving the problems of this country, but instead they are trying to destabilize parliament by having a motion in parliament to dissolve parliament in order for them to call for early elections, with the hope that that will result in a coalition government.
She said the party needs to read the Constitutional Court's full judgment on the impeachment case before commenting further. Zuma's spokesman did not answer calls seeking the chief executive's feelings on the matter. The president is in China for a summit of the BRICS economic bloc. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Anita, for that report. And on to Central Africa. 12,000 Burundian refugees are said to be repatriated back to the country in 3 months. This comes after reports from Tanzanian authority indicated that hundreds of Burundians have voluntarily registered themselves to be repatriated. Moses Havyarimana has this story.
After the UNHCR representative in Burundi, Abel Mbilinyi, met Burundi Home Affairs Minister in efforts to guarantee safe and secure reception centers for Burundian refugees who will be repatriated. Burundi government and the UNHCR announced the repatriation exercise of at least 12,000 refugees will be accomplished by the end of this year. The UNHCR representative in Burundi said that 95% of the 12,000 refugees will be coming from Tanzania.
We just came from Dar es Salaam to a meeting, and we are working together to ensure that the 12,000 people who have said they want to return to Burundi can come to Burundi in conditions of safety and dignity. And we are working with the government. We are establishing reception centers.
Last month, the Tanzanian government gave the UNHCR 7 days to start process of repatriating Burundian refugees after receiving reports that indicated thousands of refugees voluntarily had registered to be repatriated. UNHCR representative Mbilinji said that returnees will be facilitated while reintegrating in the community.
We will assist the returnees when they come. World Food Program, they are going to give food for 3 months. And thereafter, we'll see with the other agencies like FAO for assistance, which will be continued for integration. We are also looking with the other UN agencies on how much to help. So we will do everything so that the people who come do not become more vulnerable when they are in Burundi.
The UNHCR mandate for voluntary repatriation have been refined and extended from the initial consideration that UNHCR's responsibility ended when repatriants crossed the border back into their home country, to a substantive involvement with regard to facilitating to securing protection and providing assistance to returnees in their country of origin. Pascal Barandagie is the Burundi Home Affairs Minister. He says they have agreed that before the end of October, at least 6,800 refugees should be in Burundi, and that the others should be repatriated not later than December this year. He also said that the UNHCR and the Burundi government had agreed even those who will register themselves later will be facilitated to return to their homes. More than 500 people were killed in political violence in Burundi since 2015, when the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office, forcing hundreds of thousands of Burundians to seek refuge in the neighboring countries. The first group of returnees, that is estimated at about 300 people, is expected to arrive this Thursday in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Uganda's foreign minister says that his country will continue to engage its foreign policy in promoting peace and security between her neighbors and the region. Minister Kutesa says that doing this will help bring about socio-economic development in his country. Reporter Mugume Davis Gwakarinji files from Kampala, Uganda.
Minister Kutesa says the world has become a global village and all nations interdepend on each other.
Today's challenges transcend borders, and no country alone can carry the weight of the world on its shoulders.
no matter how big. Therefore, in terms of implementing our foreign policy priorities, we are strengthening our relations beyond our neighborhood and the region, utilizing the United Nations, the African Union, as I said, and other multilateral organizations.
Nancy Muwanga, a professor of political science at Makerere University, agrees.
It is imperative that it has peace in the countries that are neighboring it and doesn't have the kind of problems that are presented by conflict and the sort of problems that we are currently facing with one of the highest numbers of refugees.
One of the countries in which Uganda has intervened to help bring peace is Somalia, where Uganda has been fighting alongside other African forces. These are from Burundi, Cameroon, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Gambia, Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria, Niger, Senegal, Sierra Leone, and Zambia.
We have been in Somalia for now 10 years, and we do not intend to stay there. Why should we? I think it is important that while we advance in fighting Al-Shabaab by giving capacity to AMISOM now, we should also concentrate in creating a Somali national army so that they can take the security issues of their country in their own hands.
AMISOM stands for African Union Mission in Somalia. It is an active regional peacekeeping mission operated by the African Union with the approval of the United Nations Peace and Security Council in 2007. Francis Katana is the Executive Director of Uganda Council on Foreign Relations, an independent think tank about international relations and diplomacy. He says Uganda has a moral obligation to help other African nations to attain security and stability.
We have trade with all these countries, and when there's conflict in the neighboring countries, then our trade relationships suffer, our commerce suffers. As Pan-Africanists, the suffering of the neighbor is our suffering.
Katana, however, warns Uganda must always ensure it intervenes using diplomatic means. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Sierra Leone's National Elections Watch, NEW, a civil rights group, has expressed concern that the credibility of next year's general elections could be in jeopardy. The group also expressed concern about recent attacks of opponents of the administration in the run-up to next year's elections. The statements come after the headquarters of the Opposition Alliance Democratic Party, ADP, was recently torched. The opposition party maintains that the burning of its offices were politically motivated following what officials of the group says was the successful campaign in the strongholds of the ruling All People's Congress, APC. But the ruling party rejects the accusation as false and without merit. Marcella McCrawley, chairperson of Sierra Leone's National Elections Watch, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that there is need for an expedited, thorough investigation into politically motivated violence in an effort to maintain the country's peace and stability during next year's polls.
For us at National Elections Watch, what we plan to do is to ensure that we raise the red flag earlier before we run into any challenge or any problem. So with the exhibition process that started on the 22nd of August 2017, we immediately had a press release out to state, for example, that what we were envisaging in terms of the voter audit, we never saw the names of certain people in the database. We are not captured in the provisional voter register. So it was actually a case of lost data and misplaced data. And the good thing was a number of citizens who actually registered during the process had their data in a slip that was given to them by the Electoral Commission.
Your organization also expressed concern about ongoing intimidation and harassment of opponents. Why are you raising this concern? Is this truly happening?
A particular opposition party by the name of the Alliance Democratic Party has been specifically targeted. And we are seeing a pattern. There have been times without number in a by-election in Potloko district in constituency 050. Himself, that's the party leader, and his supporters in a particular vehicle we are targeted. But the point is, with all of these issues that are happening, and finally last week, the headquarters in Freetown was in flames. We are saying, what is the Sierra Leone police doing about this? What is the Political Party Registration Commission doing about this? Because the ADP leader is very vocal, and for us at National Elections Watch, we see the need that spaces for alternate voices need to be created. It's not only about creating those spaces, but those who are filling those spaces need to be protected. So it is quite important that we see some effort in terms of an independent and impartial investigation into the issue of the burning of the Alliance Democratic Party office in time, because what we envisage, if we continue like this, we are actually heightening the insecurity situation in the country towards the election, and we think that that is worrying.
Let me ask you about your opinion of what you are hearing on the ground in Sierra Leone. Some people are suggesting that because he broke away from the ruling party and because he appears to be making inroads in the stronghold of the ruling party, that could also contribute to it. And finally, they are also saying that he is to blame because the government is charging him for being in possession of a weapon that is not registered. And they think that undermines the country's stability, disunity, and tension.
Let me actually take the second bit of your point in terms of he's really under charge for the possession of what they call a stun gun. If the police is so swift to make that kind of investigation and equally to arrest him for trial for that particular matter, what about those issues that have been meted out to his person and to his party? Nothing has been done to that. For us, what we are saying is that we must allow due process and the rule of law has to take preeminence over this situation. If he was charged with a matter he has to answer for, fine. But then those other actions that he actually reported and nothing has been done so far is really the challenge here. The other point you raised about him being a breakaway could be, I mean, there would be a number of assumptions around why he's specifically being targeted. But for us, it's about those who want to participate. How they want to participate is not our concern. But making sure they participate within the ambit of the law, and if they participate within the ambit of the law, they are given the space to participate without fear or favor.
Marcella McCauley is the chairperson of Sierra Leone's National Election Watch, a civil society group. She was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. And the United States has ended a program that shielded nearly 800,000 young undocumented immigrants from deportation and allowed them to work and study in the country. New applications for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA, will no longer be accepted, administration officials said. President Donald Trump approved the decision, but sent Attorney General Jeff Sessions before cameras on Tuesday to announce the controversial policy change. Demonstrators opposed to the administration's decision massed in Washington and other cities beforehand, but there were no confrontations. After so much outcry, later on, President Trump tweeted that he will revisit the decision on DACA if Congress does not act in 6 months. And that's it for this Wednesday, September the 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day, Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.